Many years ago, a woman named Louise Hay published a book that was a seminal work in mind-body medicine called You Can Heal Your Life. This book changed many lives, including mine, in terms of how revolutionary it was. Today on the Ask Dr. Gill podcast, I want to talk about this work and how it applies to today and what the next stages of evolution from her work is. So stay tuned. Hello and welcome to Ask Dr. Gill. I am your host, Dr. Gill Winkleman. And today on the podcast, I want to talk about the work of Louise Hay and specifically her book, You Can Heal Your Life. Now, Hay House, this has become a huge industry, if you will. Hay House Publishing puts out many books on spirituality, mind-body medicine. And I think that there is a lost appreciation for how cutting edge this first book was. There may have been another book before that, but this was the one that sort of put everything kind of on the map, I think. And her work has been, you know, life-changing for millions of people around the world. And I think that it's really important to honor kind of what she brought. And there were other people, by the way, at that time who brought things forth. So the book took different forms. Her first book was published in 1976 called Heal Your Body, which was really started as a pamphlet to discuss metaphysical causes for health issues. And later that became, in 1984, that became a book called You Can Heal Your Life. And her work was very involved with people who were living with HIV at the time. And it was really an interesting time because people were getting sick and there was a lot of fear because they were marginalized people, mostly homosexuals, IV drug users, etc. There was not a lot of action being taken in terms of research, helping the people get well, figuring out if there was a drug or something that would stop the virus. And it became kind of a backlash. It's like, imagine if during the COVID pandemic, people who got COVID were ostracized because of the disease and illness. And that's basically what happened with the AIDS pandemic at the beginning, because it was people who were ostracized already in society who had hit first. And now we know that it's a virus that can affect anybody. So that's kind of the background of where she was working. And it was also at a time when mind-body medicine was very much marginalized. And patients were dismissed for any kind of emotional meaning with their illness. And so I think that this was what she did, was give agency to this mind-body connection, that you can have a symptom that's related to something that's going on in terms of your body, etc. So kind of the influence, I would say, for her was that thoughts and beliefs influence the body, and that there's potentially emotional patterns that correlate to physical symptoms. She was very big on affirmations as a tool for change. But her original intent was not that you were to blame for the symptom or illness, but rather it was helping you take agency and responsibility for yourself in terms of the illness. And I think what's interesting to me about this, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, and I in the second half of the show, and I have talked about this on the podcast, just because I'm saying, or she was saying, that there's a spiritual or energetic piece to a physical illness, that's not to blame the person. And I think her work was used in that way in certain communities. And I think that there is an element of that that sort of is an undertone in, I'll say, American society, which is that if something bad happens to you, it's your fault, right? That's not what this is about. This is about helping people take responsibility for what's going on in their lives, but also making sense of what is going on in their life. And it's not about blame. It's about empowerment. And that's kind of the message that I want to share with people. It's like, none of this is about blaming. If you're doing shadow work, it's not about blame. It's about understanding. It's about empowering. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the symptom or disease will go away. But what it does mean is that there's a certain amount of agency and understanding around it. And I think that can be very helpful for patients. I've had patients over the years where I've run tests to figure out what's going on, and everything came back normal, and they were in tears as a result of that. And they would have rather that I showed them results that they were dying, because at least it would make sense. And I think that when we don't understand something, it becomes very confusing to us, because it just feels random. And I think we don't like randomness. I think that there's a sense of, we need to have some sense of agency in the world, in some sense. The follow on to that I would say is that this, I think, is part of the reason that we create stories around our lives and our illness. And sometimes those stories are really, really helpful, by the way. You know, I get migraines because I was abused as a child, as an example. Sometimes those stories become limiting. I can't overcome that I was abused as a child, as an example, and therefore I will always have migraines. And so it's sort of that interplay of understanding that I think is important, and then letting go of the consequence and reprogramming it, right? So that's kind of, and that was kind of the work that she was doing. She created these affirmations. I think what's really important in terms of Louise Hay and understanding her work is that the context of the 1970s and 80s medical culture was very reductionistic and authoritarian. And what she normalized was listening to the body, self-compassion, and emotional inquiry. And this began building psychoneuroimmunology, mind-body medicine, and somatic therapies. These things didn't really exist in mainstream America at this time. And I remember reading a paper when I was in college about psychoneuroimmunology and how groundbreaking it was. And now it's like, well, this is, of course, this is what's going on, right? And what's exciting is that what we know now is the tip of the iceberg. And at some point we're going to be like, wow, we can heal things, you know, with devices that help people see kind of their patterns. I mean, that is something I think that we will see at one point. So now, part of the issue that I want to bring up, and this is not a critique of her work, I want to be clear about that. But where do we extend this work? How has this evolved? And so in the second half of the show, I want to talk about some of the assumptions in terms of the work that I don't want to say we're wrong, but we're incomplete, and where sort of our science is going in terms of mind-body medicine and how what you can do to help yourself. So stay tuned. Hello, and welcome back to Ask Dr. Gill. I am your host, Dr. Gill Winkleman. And before we jump back into the work of Louise Hay and mind-body medicine, I want to just remind you, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to email me at info@askdrgill.com. That's askdrgill.com. And I'm at the end of the show, I'm going to talk about some of the offerings in terms of workshops I'm going to be doing, as well as online courses if you just want to do it on your own. So in terms of Louise Hay and her work, one of the things that she talked about is changing your thoughts changes your body. And I don't disagree with that statement, okay? I will say that. There's a few caveats that I'm going to give you here. The first is we often don't know our unconscious thoughts, right? And so one of the things that's interesting about her work, I would say, is that everything that happens to us around us is a reflection of our thinking, including what's happening in our body. But it's not necessarily that you can do an affirmation that's going to change your experience, right? If you, I'll give you an example. If you are poor and you keep saying to yourself, I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich, you may be giving the message to yourself by saying that over and over and over again that you're poor, right? It's kind of the flip side to things. It's like the person who protests too much about something. And that's kind of what can happen with affirmations as well. And I think that acknowledging the situation as it is, I don't feel well right now, as an example, instead of saying, I feel great, like that gives you an opportunity to sort of be with what is. And I think that that is one of the issues. And by the way, this is my critique of cognitive behavioral therapy as well. It's not that understanding your thinking isn't important and understanding your beliefs isn't important. It's very important. It's that the idea that you can just replace the thought that is an issue. And I would say that in some ways, it's better to acknowledge the thought and just observe it and be with it as opposed to struggle with it. And I think a lot of times when people read these ideas of affirmations and or cognitive behavioral therapy, there's a struggling that happens against the negative thought, right? Instead of the acceptance of, well, this is how it is right now. And trusting the reality as it is. That doesn't mean that the reality is going to stay the same forever. So there's that. The other thing is that there's an assumption that this nervous system is regulated properly. And I think that what I have observed with both with myself, but also with clients, is that if you're in a dysregulated state, then the conscious choice access is limited. And oftentimes, I mean, I'll give the example of in relationships, and I think I've used this example on podcasts in the past, is I've had patients who talk about relationships, and it's really clear that the person that they're dating is not the right person for them. But they feel comfortable, but the comfort isn't that their nervous system is regulated. The comfort is that they're experiencing something that is familiar to the nervous system, right? So if you grew up in a household where you were abused by a parent, then being in a relationship where you're abused by your partner is going to feel familiar to your nervous system. And there's an unlearning that needs to happen with that. And I don't think that the you can heal your life, and by the way, this is also some of the earlier mind-body works, I don't think that they really accounted for that. And along with that, you know, a lot of this work predated trauma research. It predated attachment science. It predated polyvagal theory and some of the stuff that we now know. And by the way, there's lots of things that we don't know now that will change in 10, 20, 30, 40 years as well. So, I mean, what we know now is evolving. Everything's evolving. And there's nothing, when I say all this stuff, it's not, just so we're clear, it's not a critique. I'm very grateful for the work of Louise Hay and others from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, because it's given us a foundation for which to kind of extend what it is we're doing today, just like what the people that are, what we're doing today is going to extend, you know, and be extended in the future. And so it's beautiful, right? This is the evolution of it. So in terms of trauma, though, trauma isn't really corrected by affirmations. It's really about feeling into your nervous system. And for many people, particularly if there's trauma involved, positive thinking, like going into the positive thoughts can increase internal conflict. That can be really challenging for people as well. So I would say that this is not this critique, and I talked a little bit about this in the first half of the show. It's less of a critique around Louise Hay's work. It's more of a critique about the people who read her work and then talked about it, which is the implicit rise of self-blame or blaming the person, blaming the victim. And for you, the listener, I would say be wary of this kind of thinking. Well, this symptom is there because of something I'm doing wrong, or my thoughts cause this. And this is part of the dysregulation of the nervous system. And when you do that, use that as an opportunity to kind of to sit with that, because I'm going to guess that that is coming from something that's trauma related. The other aspect that I think is important to mention in terms of where we are today versus 40 years ago is chronic illness is different in 2026. And there's a lot of aspects to this that I think are part of this. There's digital content overload, right? There's doom scrolling. I don't know if there's more global instability today than there was in 1984. I mean, you know, back in the 80s and the 70s, we ran nuclear attack drills in school. And so a lot of people say, well, things are more unstable. I don't know if they're more unstable, but I think that there's more news cycle, so it feels like it's more unstable. And that is definitely, I think, part of this. It's like we are constantly on alert with this crisis or that crisis. And there's always something that feels like something's coming up, and that's that there's more instability. I think there was probably just as much instability and stability, you know, 40, 50 years ago. It was just that we didn't know about a lot of the things that were going on. So, and the other aspect is I think that there are more, I do think there's more environmental toxicity. Martha Herbert of Harvard talks about this, that we've gone from a couple hundred man-made chemicals in the environment to tens of thousands, and we don't know what these things are doing to our bodies, either individually or in combination. And so this creates states of chronic inflammation that can be challenging to the body. And it's why a lot of the treatments that I do, I don't want to say that they've stopped working, but people react to them now, which they weren't reacting to 10, 15 years ago. And I've talked about B6 on the podcast. You know, 20 years ago, no one reacted to B6, or almost no one reacted to B6. Now lots of people react to B6. And it's a function of detoxification pathways being shut down. And then when you introduce the B vitamins in a larger dose, the body doesn't know what to do with it, in effect. So bodies are more sensitized in a sense. And it, you can say they're more vigilant. You know, the nervous system is upregulated, and so it's on high alert all the time. The thing about healing is healing starts with feeling safe and downregulating the sympathetic nervous system. That's where healing starts, and changing your thoughts is very, very important in this process. The challenge, though, is can you do that in a way where you're not increasing the sympathetic tone, right? And I think that's really that's the piece here that I think is important for people to take. That's an important takeaway. Regulation is key around this. And if you have an affirmation that helps you feel more regulated, by all means, use it. If you have an affirmation that stresses you out, stop. Sit with the feeling. And, you know, this is part of the shadow work, I think, that I talked about in the last podcast. Shadow work can unveil things that are suppressed. Sometimes they're good things, right? And so one of the things that I think we see with the work of Louise Hay and others that is kind of this, and cognitive behavioral therapy too, it's like this forced positivity. And we want to integrate everything. The anger, the fear, the grief, things that are unresolved, so that there is resolution with them. And sometimes the forced positivity can be a form of, we'll say, spiritual bypassing. It's just suppressing. And that's true, like people who meditate and they just go into these bliss states. I know people who do meditation retreats all the time, or they do tons of ayahuasca retreats. If you don't integrate it, then you're bypassing something, and it's a negative consequence to the body and to our healing. So here's kind of the piece about that I'll say to sum this up, which is your body can heal when it feels safe. When you create safety, then you can start using these tools, these affirmations, to kind of reprogram what's going on in your system. And health starts in the energy field, in my opinion. And the science isn't there yet. Actually, that's not totally true. There's definitely some studies that show that there's energy fields around the body that show up. And I think that understanding that is really, really important. And safety is in that field, right? It's a feeling of, oh, I can just relax. And then some of the stuff that some of these older texts are talking about, that's when they work. And miracles do happen in those situations. So if you've gone down this road, I would say to ask yourself, what I would say is where have I been trying to think my way out of a nervous system problem? In other words, where am I thinking instead of feeling and justifying instead of experiencing? And I think that's the big question in terms of asking for yourself. So as far as this goes, I am offering some workshops and courses around this. I have a new offering in terms of my Eliminate Anxiety Naturally, which is really a big topic course around the physical, the emotional, the spiritual aspects of mental health and optimizing your brain. And that is sort of the crux of the big work. It's a year-long program. There's Q&A. There's lots of content in it for yourself, and then you can, that you do on your own. And then you can work with me either through the group that will do monthly group sessions. And by the way, I'll record those and put those on there as well. And also you can work with me directly, one-on-one, if that is necessary, at a discounted rate. And I'm also putting together these workshops just on sort of the health story and reclaiming the aspect of yourself that is the healthy part of you, and letting go of the story that we've created about who you are and in terms of your illness. And so those are some of the offerings you can find on my website, AskDrGill.com. And thank you so much for joining me. I really, really appreciate your listening, and I will see you next time.